do you know why that can be? Well, there's a link to the forum. I don't. Are you in my group, of course, because Joanna, you're from Leganés, right? You go to the Leganés group. If you look in the forums and you subscribe to the forum that we have for this group, I have a link there to the three recordings. Anyway, that has a very easy solution. Let me copy those three. There should be four by now because we did the Southern English one. Southern English. My God, you can really notice it's 8:15. Southern Irish one last week, which was a bit of a disaster because some of you kept having connection problems and I had connection problems. And anyway, last week, several colleagues told me that Inteca was going a bit haywire and it was not only me. So I'm happy it wasn't my computer. Yesterday and today I've had minor problems of connectivity that have affected some of the minutes of the classes, nothing compared to what happened last week in most of the classes. So I guess they're just seeing the total bandwidth that UNED is able to allow simultaneously. I guess there's hundreds of us recording web conferences at the same time, and that is a problem. This is Variaciones Fonético-Fonológicas. If I go to the forum, let me just copy and paste the links to the three conferences, and you can my group is Campo de Gibraltar, Las Palmas de Gran Canaria, Madrid, Sevilla, and Tenerife. But, I mean, I get people from all over the place. I've had people from Galicia and from Valencia connect all the time. So, let's see. Will this copy? If I copy and paste this, does it? Problem with Inteca is that I think it doesn't copy. URLs, hyperlinks. You can see the message, right? Yeah. Okay. Copy link address. Paste. That's one. That's the day number one introduction to phonetic and phonological varieties of English. Link here. Copy link address. This is RP English. And last but not least, copy link address. This is Scottish and Welsh English. Regarding Southern Irish English, I still haven't checked because the last week and at the beginning of this week, there was still a problem with the recording for the last week. I can see I have a question here from somebody. Okay, I'll answer that afterwards. The link to last year's presentation, which is very similar, is this is not the web conference. Wait, web conference is over here. This is okay. In the meantime, sorry, one moment, and I'm almost done, and we can start with the real stuff. Where can I find the audios for the exercises and storage files? What do you mean? In audio? Don't you in the what is this? what is a storage file? If you have a look at the course planner, el curso virtual, on your left you have home or course planner, depending on how you have your planificador del curso, depending on how you have your setup. If you go to documentos, if the documentos icon, or if for every unit, if you go to the how do you call it? Practica? Practice. Unit 1 practice, unit 2 practice, unit 3 practice. So if you go there, it takes you to the part where the audio files are. Unit 1, unit 2, and unit 3. In unit 3, for example, that's American English, you have theory and practice. If you go to practice, you have general American and further practice, general American. And there you have the audio files. Inside, it's like Variaciones Fonético-Fonológicas, the file storage, that's the documentos icon. Unit 3 practice, general American. Okay, so, yes, from... Yeah, I don't know if this is the same URL. That's the URL that takes you to the storage file for Unit 3 practice. Okay, so the accents of American English and American English and Canadian English distinguish themselves from the rest of the varieties in several ways. The first one is that there is a higher degree of regional variation regarding Australian English, New Zealand English, or South African English. And the second difference that we find between American accents and other accents of English is that there isn't a regionalist standard accent accepted by everybody. So you just have to cherry pick one and hope that everybody will agree with you that is the best example of that regional accent. So that in itself is quite a dilemma, because not everybody will accept that there's one accent that is conveyed as a social preference for the rest of the speakers. The one that represents the rest, because it's just another one of the options, another one of the accents of America. I thought I had no, but that's in the presentation that I'm going to use for the next class. I want to remind you that after Easter we should have a break week, but we're going to have class. Okay, I'm going to send out the invitation at the end of Easter. And next, the Thursday after Easter, the 16th, which we shouldn't have class, we're going to have an extra one. Yes, you're lucky enough to have 8 instead of 6. In that one, I'm going to talk about the prosody of American English. Okay, so today I'm going to focus on vowel consonant inventory, on the more obvious differences between American English and RP English, and the week after the break, we're going to have another class with the prosody of American English. For that one, I have a specific presentation, the same that I had for Southern Irish English. I forgot to mention the link that I copied before this one. Is the link not to the Southern Irish English class from this year. It's a Southern Irish class from last year, because I haven't had time to rewatch the Southern Irish conference that we had last week. And I'm pretty certain that it's not 100% okay in terms of sound quality, because sometimes you were telling me that you couldn't hear me, and my experience after accumulating a couple of incidents like that is that every time students can't hear the teacher. The teacher has to restart the audio and video configuration, because that means that the teacher it has been kicked out of the conference for whatever bug or for whatever reason, which I do not know. But just so you so you have a good or more or less solid one hour explanation, something like that. I'm copying the recording from last year, which is more or less decent. Not my best performance, but not my worst one either. Regarding Southern Irish English, and you can watch that and come to your own conclusions. Regarding the pronunciation of North American English, if you go to the Trudgel and Hannah book and you have a look at the map in the new edition on page 47. In the older edition, it's probably page 46. You'll see that there's a map of America. The two books side by side. Okay. And if I take one of those maps, you can see that what is considered American English, it happens a bit like RP English. It's going to be just the specific subtype of English, which is not which is not representative of the entirety of America. Quite rather the rest. The opposite. It's just one specific accent called Central Eastern. This Central Eastern is the accent that is considered the most representative of the majority of the traits that separate American English from RP English. If you go, for example, towards New York City English or New England English, you'll see that you have a problem that one of the most significant traits of American English, which is rhoticity, is lost because neither New England English nor New York English are rhotic. They have a very strange mix in terms of how they make up for that lack of rhoticity that the RP does by extending the length of the vowels. We've seen that other varieties that extension of vowels is not going to be very common. So something that you're going to start to notice, and I think that American English is a very good point to start to come to very solid conclusions about what has to be your key takeaways from this course, is that RP English is probably the most generous variety in terms of vowel length on the one hand and vowel inventory on the other. We tend to see longer vowels and a bigger inventory of vowels in RP English than we see in the rest. In the rest, we see how the vowels merge sometimes in a radical manner, such as, for example, in Scottish English, we saw that there was a radical merge of vowels, or in an intermediate manner, as we'll probably see today. But vowel length loses its predominance that it has in RP English, and therefore some of the vowels are going to merge, some of the diphthongs are going to disappear, other diphthongs are going to be transformed, some monophthongs are going to be colored. That's a key word for today. Besides, let me see if I can find where my cursor is here. Okay. Besides the word of rhoticity, it's a rhotic accent, and there's an R coloring. American English and English English differentiate in spelling, in grammar, in pronunciation. Here in this subject, we're going to focus the majority of our attention on the pronunciation side. But as you can see, for example, in the word coloring, There are going to be spelling changes, and even there's going to be grammar changes that happen in all the varieties. We're going to see how there's going to be stress patterns that are different. For example, some words that end with certain suffixes receive the stress in one place in RP English and in a different place in American English. And it's pretty consistent, so you can establish rules to differentiate ones from the others. So another way of referring to general American English is the Central Eastern American accent. Central Eastern American accent. The other big varieties in America: Western accent, Midland accent, Inland Southern, Lower Southern, Northern, New York City, Eastern New England, and that's inside United States. If we go to Canada, General Canadian, Maritime, and Newfoundland. From all of those accents, we're only going to pay attention to one of those accents, to Central Eastern. So the same way that you didn't have to freak out with the huge variety that you saw in England, you don't have to freak out with the huge variety that you see in American English. For whatever reason, the Equipo Docente has considered it appropriate to at least introduce standard Canadian English. I think that it's a bit distracting to have Northern Irish or standard Canadian. But I want to remind you that it's not exam material, and you don't have to study it as exam material in this exam. It's just something to extend your knowledge if you're interested and you have sufficient time. That my perception is that in general you don't. In terms of the phonological differences that we see between American English and RP English, North American English has some changes that are general to many varieties of English. It's that e substitutes e as a phoneme in word final positions. So in RP English, this would be RP. In general, in RP, when we have words like very, or lovely, in general American, you would always have an E sound. Very, every. Okay, fury, boring. You have a tendency of having an E rather than an I in word final positions. You can see that there's a very significant merge the three ways of pronouncing the A sound, the A and the A and the A are merged into an A and an A. And this is very important. This length is lost. This is General American, and above you have RP. This is a very significant difference between one accent and another. You're going to I'm going to rectify what I just wrote. Actually, the one that merges is this vowel, the one that we say, for example, in not, got, hot, that disappears in American English. American English, it's taken over by this? Is there a pattern of everything that is at in RP English is at in American English? Everything that is ah in RP English is in American English? No, by no means. It's a mix and match game that is played there. I'm going to refer to the foreignness of words as one of the elements that are used to distinguish the different accents. But first of all, I'm going to read from the notes that that you have there available for download and that I hope you have printed out because on the screen they appear a bit tiny. As you remember, the American continent is colonized in the 17th century. The reason for such a late colonization has to do with historical reasons. America had been dominated by two navies, by the French Navy and the Spanish Navy. The Spanish Armada or the Spanish conquering effort had a stronghold on South America and impeded any type of expeditions towards America. Spanish and French. I mean Spanish and Portuguese, of course. Spanish and Portuguese empires had a stronghold on South America, and they held the English in an effort to try to compete, and they were not very competitive in terms of maritime power during the 16th century. During the 16th century, both France and England, and because they were engaged in warfare between the two countries, missed on the opportunity of exploring colonizing several territories, South America, in the case of Spain mainly, and Africa in the case of Portugal. Portugal had a very diversified fleet, and they sent some expeditions to the east through the south of Africa. They had several colonies throughout Africa, and they had the territory of Brazil as their stronghold in America. When the Spanish naval power decreased, both France and England reignited their efforts to colonize new territories and looked outwards in terms of finding new opportunities. The way that they found new opportunities was by granting licenses to private expeditions that had to pay taxes back to the crown in the case of England. They did that moving towards Australia and the continent of Oceania, and they did the same in America. That means that the people that went to America, that colonized America, were basically worried about exploiting the land and coming back home, even though that very soon changed into a different type of affair, and the settlers saw that there was an opportunity to prosper and mostly to settle down. What we had is a linguistic divide that became very obvious, and basically most of the East Coast English that is spoken nowadays resemble very little modification to the English that was spoken in the territory in the 17th century. So when we see a difference between America and Great Britain, and we tend to have the feeling that American English is the more modern version of English, the truth is the opposite, that the English that remained unchanged, or that changed very little, was the American spoken in America, whereas the English spoken in the British Isles changed significantly and gave way to different ways of evolving over the course of the centuries. Why is American English rhotic? Well, it's probably rhotic because of the huge amount of emigrants that arrived from Ireland mainly, and that mixed and mingled with emigrants from Scotland, from emigrants from Poland, from Germany, from the Netherlands, and other parts of Europe mainly. I don't know if there's a question there. Okay, another student came in. From that point of view, American English resembles the melting pot that the American society was for the course of two centuries while it was growing. Among the influences of English that arrived, the Welsh that emigrated to America, the Scottish Irish from the Ulster, Germans that had some notions of English, and that established, depending on where they settled, it established clusters of English that evolved in one manner or in the other. And that's why you see huge areas that have the same accent. They represent either an emigration settlement cluster or the waves of expansion that America had. If you have a look at the map on page 47 of the new edition, you can see that all the West has an accent that is similar. The Northern and the Midland have an accent that is different to the one in inland Southern, and in the lower Southern there is a different accent. What happened between the South and the North of America? Well, what happened between the North and the South of America, especially on the East Coast, is that there was a very strong divide for racial reasons. Slavery was acknowledged and was accepted in the South of the United States for the first 70 or 80 years of the Union, and afterwards it changed due to the Civil War. The Emancipation Act stopped the possibility of having slaves of owning slaves. One of the things that is interesting about American English, and this goes beyond the scope, and I'm just going to spend a minute or two talking about this, is that what is understood as vernacular English, I don't know if you've heard about it, or Black English by many, is the English spoken by the Black communities in America, and that is extremely different to the territories where they're established. And because of the migrations that happened after the American Civil War, and how hundreds of thousands of Black Americans moved to cities in the North, they moved to the cities in the North, but they maintained their accents that came from the South. So the clusters of vernacular English that we find in America are representative of the type of Southern accent that they spoke, because it is a fact that there has still not been enough integration to dissolve the linguistic differences, or to blend the linguistic differences with the mainstream accents in each territory. So you'll see that in one territory in particular, in cities in particular, you have people that speak What's the older one? Or they develop? Oh, sorry, I missed these two. Well, vernacular means that it's not a proper kind of English. What's the older one? Or they developed at the same time? For your first question, Rafael, sorry, I missed both of your questions. I couldn't see it. I didn't scroll down enough. Raela is your name. Sorry, I thought it was Rafael. Raela. They developed. RP English and the rest of the English accents evolved very much because English in the British Isles was very dynamic and was subdued to many changes and experimentation, while the rest of the accents of the world were very conservative because most of the territories were not interested in writing better and being culturally more sophisticated. They were basically worried in surviving. Think about 17th century America or 18th century America with constant fights against the Native Americans and a struggle for the land, for the resources, with very little authority, a lot of corruption compared to a well-established democracy or at least a very well-established parliamentary, not a democracy, parliamentary monarchy, such as the one they had in the British Empire. The difference cannot be more radical. So while the British Isles had time and interest enough in evolving the language and in being sophisticated and in doing this cultural exercise of improving the language, in the rest of the world, they were worried about colonizing the land, conquering the spaces needed, establishing a strong foothold on the territory, and that makes the language evolve very little. That turns linguistic change into something very conservative, because if you're not able to understand and to properly communicate with your community, with everyone that's near or far from your territory, it eliminates a lot of your possibilities of doing commerce, of gaining friendship, of engaging in relationships or building a community. So the generality is that every variety that is not in the British Isles suffered very little change after they were first implemented. This serves for American English, it serves for Canadian English, it serves for New Zealand English, it serves for Australian English, and it even serves for South African English. So the idea is that depending on the moment when English was implemented in that territory, that's more or less the base of the type of language that was spoken at that time by the group of people that settled there, and very little has changed from there. Part of the change of American English is for the same reason that Northern Irish English changed so much, because they received huge waves of Scottish immigrants that mixed with the Irish English and produced a different variety Northern Irish English. In the case of American English, there were waves of immigrants coming from Wales, from the Ulster, the Scottish Ulster, and also from Scotland, and especially from Ireland. So those four types of immigrants added to other people from other territories, of course, from other countries in Europe, such as Germany or Poland, make up this linguistic melting pot of what American English is. Vernacular doesn't mean old. British English is a modern version. Exactly. That's what I want you to come to the conclusion, because by default, you would come to understand the opposite, that British English or RP English or English English is less sophisticated or it's more ancient. And it's not. It's the one that has experimented the most with linguistic changes, whereas other varieties of English show very little appeal for changing linguistically. That is changing now, of course, because now all of these cultures are very well established. So those that didn't evolve much are the vernacular is what we normally understand as not appropriate. So I don't know. I think the vernacular is a word in Spanish. I don't know if you have, there is a better word for vernacular. I would say it's vulgar. Yes, that's what. If you think about people that were living in Georgia and they emigrated to San Francisco, or they emigrated to Los Angeles, or to Detroit, or to Baltimore, or to Chicago, in the North, they spoke a more elevated, more educated variety of English. When black people arrived there that were sons of slaves or freed slaves, those people brought their accent. You don't suddenly stop speaking one type of English and start speaking the educated type of the place where you go to live. Since language is one of the barriers for social integration, what happens is that this vernacular English has evolved as a bubble inside a variety of English that has very little interaction. So a person that speaks black English, vernacular English, in for example, Detroit, normally speaks very different to a white person that speaks English in Detroit. So even within these spaces that you see on page 47, there's going to be the spots of English all around the country that represent the huge waves of immigrants that moved to places like St. Louis, that moved to places like Detroit, that moved to places like Chicago, or to the West Coast, to Los Angeles and San Francisco mainly. So that's the interesting thing about vernacular English, about how English moved around in America, and how that is completely different to other varieties of English that we'll see in the following weeks, in the last weeks of the course. So I think it's time that we move to page 43 of the book, and we do the same exercise that we do the rest of the weeks. I mean, I could read those words, and I would probably get most of them very accurately in general American, but I have to repeat, my English accent is probably more accurately closer to West Coast American English than to Central Eastern. It is true that Central Eastern is the type of accent that we listen to when we watch, for example, news in America. But I really don't think that I have that type of accent. So I think it's better if I play the audio file for this variety of English, so you can come to your own conclusion. Okay, so I'm asking you to go to the table 3-1 on page 43, and you're going to see how the inventory is very similar to the one that we have in RP English. There are two things that we have to take into consideration that are very different to what we're used to seeing in other varieties. The first one, the length in RP English is completely lost in American English. There are no long, there are no colons in the transcriptions. So it's going to be a different type of transcriptions. You're not going to have the typical fada that you have in RP English. There's going to be a lot of monophthongs that have an R connected. That's called R coloring. And we're going to have an E, but a different E than the one we have in RP English, an Americanized E that we already saw, very similar phoneme in both Scottish and Irish. like in bed. It's opener and lower. We have the ah, the ah, the uh, the oo, the e, the a, the I, the oi, the oo, the o, the ow, the o, and the uh. Okay, so let me play that audio for you.
Six A, U.S. English, Eastern.
Bid, mirror, wanted. Bid, marry. Bed, marry. Path, dance. Half, banana. Pot, bard, father. Calm, horrid. Put, hurry. Put, be, very. Peer, bay, pear, Mary, by, fire, night, ride, boy, boot, tour, boat, bout, loud, tower, paw, port, talk, boring, long, poor, about, sofa, bird, furry, butter. As a language changes, it may well change in different ways in different places. No one who speaks a particular language can remain in close contact with all the other speakers of that language. Social and geographical barriers to communication, as well as sheer distance, mean that a change that starts among speakers in one particular locality will probably spread only to other areas with which these speakers are in close contact. This is what has happened over the centuries in the case of the languages we now call English and German. 2,000 years ago, the Germanic peoples living in what is now, for the most part, Germany, could understand one another perfectly well. However, when many of them migrated to England, they did not remain in close contact with those who stayed behind. The result, to simplify somewhat, was that different linguistic changes took place in the two areas independently, so that today English and German, while clearly related languages, are not mutually intelligible.
Okay, so that's a portion of text that we normally listen to from the other varieties. Give me your point of view. How different is this? How challenging is it regarding other varieties that you've already listened to? You've already heard four varieties besides this one, the base RP, Welsh English, Scottish English, and Southern Irish English. Does this one sound more challenging, less challenging? I don't know. I think, for example, Almudena has been in all the classes. I don't know if Joanna has also been in all the classes. What is your... This is easier. I think it has to do also with experience and with exposure. When the students ask me, which other accents would you choose from the Southern Hemisphere? Yes. I always tell them, I would probably avoid Australian English because I don't know that many amount of Australian people, but I would avoid Scottish English for the same reason. I know many more, I think we are more used to American English because of movies and TV series. Exactly. Yes, I would agree. And fortunately, modern television is being a bit more democratic because it used to be a dictatorship of American English. Now, luckily enough, we have enough varieties of English to enjoy an interesting array of accents from different parts, even though American English still has a position of power that they enjoy exercising. From the point of view of the vowel system, and I'm on page 2 of this document, what we're going to see is a simplification and a merge of different elements. As we said, we're going to refer to General American accent as a Central Eastern accent of American English. There is not a 100% consensus on these, on this vowel and consonant inventory. Even though the file that I sent before is very consistent with the information that we have both in Trudgel and Hannah and in Celia Barreiro's notes. So I think that this other International Phonetic Alphabet for American English that I sent in a link is really interesting to take into consideration, because it combines the knowledge that you already have from pronunciación de lengua inglesa with the information that you acquire about general American English. The vocalic system pays more attention to quality rather than length. There is a distinction where there is more separation between the variety of vowels, rather than relying on longer vowels and shorter vowels. That is going to be less the case in American English. There is a tendency to lengthen what RP English considers short vowels, and therefore long vowels are shortened, short vowels are lengthened. There is there isn't a distinctive duration difference between long and short vowels. This is why American English, the tendency that we have is people speak very fast. This is the perception that people have. The perception is based on the tempo of the language. The same way that we consider Scottish English or Irish English to sound very musical because it's up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. What we see with American English is that the tempo is very high. You probably need less seconds to read through a text using a general American accent that you do with RP English, because you need to space out the vowels. They pay a lot of attention to the difference between short and long vowels, and therefore it has an overall effect on the super segment. RP English pronunciation and general American English especially differ on in vowels, even though the roticity of American English makes English American English very different. And there is another effect that happens with the T. The T has four ways of being realized, and we'll talk about that later on when we talk about the consonants. The phoneme O doesn't exist. This phoneme disappears from, where is my pen? Over here. The phoneme O that we have in got or not, this phoneme disappears in general American. Okay? And there's going to be a tendency to produce words that have a foreign origin with a different vowel pattern. You can't see it. You can't see what I wrote on the board. This is a problem that I had the other day. Yes. Mm-hmm. Can the rest see it? I do. Well, Raela, when I started to have that problem the last week, maybe you have to... Oh, okay. Okay. Sometimes you just have to exit the web conference and enter again, or press on... If you have any type of visualization problems or audio problems, and it's only you, it's normally due to the connection. The tutors are turning into IT experts in terms of video conferencing troubleshooting because of how many tutorial recordings we're doing these days. I don't know where I was. Ah, okay. There's a loss of the all. Where was I? It is normally substituted. This vowel is normally substituted by the a sound, which is shorter in duration than the RP counterpart. Okay, so the a is the main substitute. The other one is the o, which is also shorter in duration than the RP counterpart. Therefore, they have no colon. No tienen los dos puntos. Okay, they lack the colon in all the cases. There is roticity in the vowels, so that means that the vowels are going to have an R coloring. All general American vowels have R coloring. So if you have to talk about this in writing, you have to say that all the vowels have R coloring. This is their articulation has been modified, so they sound as having an R resonance when they are followed by the letter R in the spelling. In particularly, this is noticeable in central vowels. Okay, so the next page talks about the phonetic differences between the general American E and the RP E. It's in most cases the significant difference is going to be in terms of representation more than in terms of real difference. Examples of the word E in transcription, the E at the beginning of even, okay? These or we, okay? Those are three examples of that E. The E, it tends to be a opener or even slightly diphthongized, particularly when stressed and followed by a final voiced consonant, as in did. So there's a retraction before you get to the D, did. Okay, some varieties of English, as you can see, they're going to play with what the vowel does. There's going to be like an insertion of vowels that are not expected in the pronunciation. That is not a mainstream effect, but it does happen. If you listen to Southern accents, you're going to notice how that happens. There's going to be a lot of extra voweling in those varieties. And fortunately, you don't have to study that for the exam. Examples of the I in American English are the I in if, in which, in the case of, in the case that variety is aspirated, or which if it's not aspirated, and many, the end of many. Okay, the American e is more open and a little retracted. That means that it's pronounced from the back of the mouth. Okay, so it's the typical e sound that you have at the beginning of any, or said, okay? It's becoming a more central strut-like vowel. Northern city chain shift. We'll talk about the northern city chain shift next week, okay? I won't devote too much time because I would run out of time if I got with that. Sometimes it's transcribed as an e, as the traditional symbol. So we can transcribe this, or we can transcribe this. Okay, so both are accepted. I would say that if you're in American English, if you're transcribing in general American, you should probably opt for this one to distinguish the difference with the original RP. I would go for that one in general. in some authors see a difference between the A in any and the A in vacation. It's a different type of A, depending on the variety, and that has to do with what we talked about here, the Northern City chain shift, that there is like a substitution in chains of vowels. We'll talk about that next week. The struts, in the case of the struts, in general American, it tends to be less open, and it goes towards an sound. Sometimes it's followed by an R, and it is, it can be, if this is followed by an R, one representation is to do this. Okay, well, probably that R should be like a bit higher than that one. Examples of this, if it's isolated and not with an R, other or one, it's a in one, or in at the beginning of other, okay, that type of sound. The a in RP morphs into a combination of an a or an a. In general American, the a is quite fronted and shorter than in RP, and if it's followed by an R, it transforms into an R. Like, for example, I have some examples around here for that one. October, not grandma. Okay, so this is what transforms general American into a distinctly different accent. I think that these two vowels are very important to distinguish the difference between these two and the RP longer ah sound, because they're really going to make a difference. The O in RP English that we said doesn't exist in American English, the O tends to be in American English an A in general. So instead of saying not, we would say not. Instead of saying got, we say got. Okay, so that's just pronouncing that. You're filling your accent with a lot of nasality. What you're going to see is that there's an overall nasality to American English. American English is completely nasal. So I remember that sometimes when students want to make fun of your accents or try to imitate it or mock it, one way is to cover your nose. And even though that may seem mocking, it's very accurate. It's accurate because American English has a general nasality to the entire vowel inventory and to the entire phonetic inventory. It's nasal in general. There is a tendency of pronouncing the O differently regarding the RP counterpart. Besides changing the symbol, examples of where the O is present, in RP English, we would find it at the end of words like pull. In American English, I would say that's going to be an A, like the one you have above, the one I just said, God, oh my God. I don't know if you've watched Friends, and there's a very exaggerated female secondary character, and she's like very exaggeratedly American in her accent, and she says that, "Oh my God," and it's like very exact, very nasal, very towards the A. But again, the problem with American English is that there is no 100% consensus. You meant that. Okay, that the pronunciation is more like an ah. I thought you were saying about the all that I was talking about now. Okay, yes, then we're on the same page. Examples of this all, what we're saying, just to be clear, this all with no colon, okay, with no dos puntos, is the all that we have in all, want, or saw. Want, saw, all. As you can see, it's not the same. It's not the same sound. It's similar, but it's not the same. So when I say in American English, all, want, saw, I'm not using the same sound exactly that when I say Paul. Okay, I just want you to be aware that all is different than the, it's like closer to an A and to an O that we would have in RP English. The U that we have, the U that we have, for example, sorry, how do you say dos puntos, a colon? We call it a colon. The C-O-L-O-N, like colon. Let me see, this is page 4, right? Yes. So the U sound that you would have, in RP English, for example, in put, you have it in American English, for example, in good. Okay, it's not exactly the same, not very different. The same happens. Well, we have the U symbol is the same. The longer U is the same, so just that it's missing again the colon, and there's not going to be any phonetic differences. It's going to be a matter of basically length. Example of this U sound we have in words like oozing, school, coup. Examples of the substitute of the longer version of the schwa, what we referred before as an er. We have this, for example, in bird or girl. Other examples of that combination or that R coloring. Early, first, or sir. Okay? If you print out that phonetic alphabet in American English, what I like about it is that it comes with a lot of examples, and I'm super bad thinking of examples. So I really appreciate that from the file. In terms of diphthongs, the I, A, OI are significantly, I posted the example, I posted the link before. Let me write it again. Let me look for it. There you go. I did that at the beginning of the class, but I posted the links to the different conferences, so that mixed it up with the rest. The thing is that the table that Professor Barreiro includes is very complete, but I sometimes feel at a loss with examples, and I like to illustrate it with examples, trying to pronounce it as accurately as I can. And for once in American English, I feel that I can pronounce it more or less accurately. So I enjoy having enough examples to illustrate the differences. In the cases of the I diphthong, we have words like eyes, time or why. In the case of the A diphthong, we have able, make, or way. In the case of the oi diphthong, we have oil, point, or boy. In the case of the ow diphthong, we have out, down, now. In the case of the o diphthong, which is the counterpart of the RP exclusive. I would say that I can't think of another variety that has it. Maybe South African English has it. I don't remember right now. The diphthong is different in RP English than it is in most varieties, because most of the varieties tend to substitute the initial schwa in o for an o. So there would it sounds more natural in other varieties to say o than it does to say in RP to pronounce a schwa at the beginning of the diphthong. That o diphthong in American English is the one that we find, for example, at the beginning of over, in both, and in so. Okay. When diphthongs that end in a schwa in RP English are just not going to make sense in American English. They're going to simply be monophthongs with an R. In the case of the ia, like fia, we're going to have IR, like in ears, years, here. In the case of the, let me go to the next page. In the case of the air, like pair, we're going to have an air. Like in airport, therefore, where. As you can see, the nasality in the whole diphthongation, well, in this case, in the monophthong with an R, is very obvious. Something that's interesting is that the air diphthongs sometimes transform into the A monophthong with an R sometimes transforms into air or into air. Airport. So it's both acceptable to say airport or to say airport. Okay, to close it into an E this type of sound. And the ua, like in pua, is going to be ur. We see that, for example, in insurance or insure. Okay. Sometimes we're going to see yod presence, not in these two words that I've added. There's a tendency to lower and centralize the sequence of vowels. That's within that parallelogram that we remember from, or that trapezoid that we remember from the RP pronunciation, scheme. In terms of triphthongs, they're not going to exist because triphthongation is an RP way of making up for a missing R at the end of a diphthong. And instead of fire, we're going to have fire. Instead of layer, we're going to have layer. Instead of koya, we're going to have koyer. Instead of flower, we're going to have flower. Instead of sour, we're going to have sour. Okay, so the substitution is going to be very obvious. Sometimes there's going to be a process that is called smoothing that eliminates one of the vowels from that set. Referring to the consonants, and we're reaching the end of this week's class. Remember that after the break, we're going to continue with American English. It's an extra class, and it's going to be more about what isn't exactly the inventory of of vowels and consonants, but what goes beyond the prosody and the intonational elements of American English. From the point of view of consonants, there is not a general consensus. I mean, not every speaker does this, but many speakers aspirate W's. And if you remember the way that we refer to this aspiration of W's is by using the upside down element for the W. We have this when there is no aspiration, and we have this symbol when there is aspiration. This would be an HW type of sound. So this word would be which, and this word would be which. There would be a slight aspiration here that is very noticeable in isolation, not so noticeable in connected speech. When we speak in a connected speech, it's barely noticeable. Let me drink some water, because I have to say, one of the particularities of this new situation is that I only speak in front of my computer. I don't speak all day long because I'm just isolated here at home, and I'm only speaking to you guys during the week. So some speakers have a contrast between which and which, or were and where. Well, those have different pronunciation. Interesting to say, because I think it's better explained that the explanation that we have here in Professor Barreiro's notes are the four realizations of the T consonant. We have T's that have no aspiration. The aspiration that we see in word initial positions and in word final positions in RP English doesn't always happen in American English. So sometimes we have words like today, because of the schwa, it loses the aspiration today. Still or get. Word final T's do not get aspiration. Sometimes we have T's with aspiration. When do we have that? We have that sometimes before a vowel, or in the presence of a W. For example, in two, very, very significant. Or attention. You can see it's a very deep aspiration. It's not a quick one. It's a very obvious one. Other two realizations of the T consonant. Exactly. Well, that's a perfect one. The R tapping, similar to a D that we see in words that are intervocalic. The one that I was referring to in the second place was, for example, in attention, the aspirated one. But in the case of the word that you're writing over there, I think your name is Beatrice, right? Yes, yeah. I'm starting to memorize your names. I won't be able to recognize your faces, but I'm memorizing your names. Is the one that we see, for example, in the word that Beatriz wrote there. If we were speaking in RP English, we would say beta, very, very marked T. But if I were speaking to my brother, for example, because we only speak in English, I would say better. That R is, that T in the middle sounds almost like an R, sometimes closer to a D. So I would say better, or I could even say better with a D sound. The same if I say agua, if I say water in RP English, or if I say in general American, I would say water or water with a D sound. Okay. And finally, There's a fourth realization, butter. That one is, it's a bit harder to get from a U to an R, but it's closer to a D, butter. Sometimes it might sound like an R in connected speech. This one, the one that I wrote down here, that I ran out of space. So this is one. This is another. This is another. And the other one is one that we're familiar with because of Southern Irish English, the glottal stop. Certain. The word certain here, instead of pronouncing, oops. Yeah, I wrote out of the limits of the board. Instead of pronouncing this T, I would create a stop, an instantaneous stop. Certain. Okay, I could pronounce that as a T, the first realization, certain. Okay, or I could opt for a glottal stop, certain. Okay, so the glottal stop is explained here as, for example, in button, botón. We can say button and put a schwa there after the T, or we can say button. That is normally marked with a symbol, with a line below the end to explain that there is an elision of the vowel. That precedes the glottal stop is an allophone of the T in English, not only in American English, but in American English it appears in certain environments only. The T tapping that is explained on page 6 of Professor Barreiro's example is what I was talking about before. The T tapping, the one in butter, better. Or water, party, get it, 20, frontal, okay, and the realization of a dark L. Dark L's are common in American English. Not my best L. It looks like a T. Like in milk, but in the case of that, it can happen in word final position after a T tapping, like in frontal. Okay, so there's a T tapping and a dark L. Whenever there's a vowel. Whenever there is a vowel at the beginning of the syllable, this T tapping effect doesn't happen. Such as you have the examples there, in attend, return, attack. Okay, it doesn't happen in lightness or in footplate. Okay, because it's not immediately followed by a vowel. It doesn't have that intervowel. Difference. Some people, instead of calling a tap, they call it a flap. Both words are commonly used by linguists. There is no general consensus there. Two more things before I finish. The L has a tendency, I wrote that already there, to be dark in many in many positions. Some speakers use a dark L in all of the positions. Valley, doll. The creation of the previous vowel makes the tongue have to seek an L that is dark because it doesn't reach the top of the mouth to produce a light a clear L. This also happens before stressed vowels, such as in latter or lier. Okay? When there's a yod present, there's a tendency to create a dark L. Normally in transcriptions, you don't have to pronounce a dark L. Referring to the R, it tends to be pronounced as an approximant with retroflexion. This reminds us to Southern Irish English, very similar. Examples of retroflex R. Where are my R's? I have them all together. Yeah, here. Wow, these are the R-colored vowels, but I don't know if I have any significant examples of R color of R of the retroflex R. Too bad. Maybe I have some here. Well, here I have a few. R can also be pronounced as an alveolar tap. That's the same as when we trill in Spanish, when we say rrr, but only doing it once. Okay? Like in Mary, train, red. As you can see, you're hitting the same way that you would hit when you pronounce the strong R in Spanish, like rrr, but you're only doing it once. Train, red, and you're not doing it so strong against the alveolar ridge in your mouth. And I think that we're going to leave it there. And the next week we're going to take over from page 8. We're not going to base most of the explanation on the notes. I have a specific PowerPoint presentation for that. Let me wish you a fantastic Easter, and I hope you stay safe. You remain very strong in your head and have a fantastic time. Yes, Matthew. After Easter, the first week should be a break week, but we're going to have class. Okay, it's not you haven't received the invitation yet. I'll post a general announcement in the appropriate forum. Okay. Take good care of yourself. Hope to see you all soon. Okay? Goodbye. Thank you very much.